Blog Talk Radio.
Little one, everything is going to be all right. You're listening to Tippy Talk. Time now to sit back, relax, listen, and enjoy the moment. Newborn is the official band that provides all the music for Tippy Talk. To hear more of the music, you can go to newbornband.com and enjoy the wonderful sound. And now it is time to step into the Tippy Zone, where we explore the other side of reality, the side that allows you to reshape your life, step into your power, and connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk, where we go from where you are to where you want to be. I'm your host, Tippy Feldstein.
Welcome to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Feldstein, and I'm dedicated to explore a life that is lived with clarity, confidence, control, and with awareness. And today's quote is, live today, not yesterday, not tomorrow. Inhabit your moment. Don't rent them out to tomorrow. And that's a quote from Jerry Spinelli, who was a writer. And today, we are going to be discussing humor and happiness and the connection between humor and happiness. We have a guest today that is a humor and happiness expert. His name is Peter DePaula. Peter DePaula has a long history that we're going to be talking about, but he's also been researching and looking into the connection that humor and happiness gives us in our lives. And so, if you want to be happy, if you prefer to look at the humor part of life, then you definitely want to stop everything you do. You want to relax and you want to sit back and you just want to listen. But if you're driving, don't relax too much and don't close your eyes because you don't want any problems. So I would like to welcome Paul to the talk. I mean, Peter. just because your name starts with a P does not make it Paul. So, Peter, I'd like to welcome you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tippy, for having me. It's an honor to be here speaking with you today about my happiness and humor connection. Thank you.
Yeah, is that a mistake that a lot of people make? Because you have the name Paul in your name, it's Peter DePaula. Does anybody ever call you Paul?
all the time. They call me Paula Peter, so I respond with saying, any saint's name will do. It's fine.
Paul the Peter, yeah. That is cute. I like that, too. So you can go backwards. You can go happiness connection to humor or humorous connection to happiness, both ways also, right? So
it doesn't matter which path you take, you're going to wind up in either place because they're both closely connected.
Exactly.
You can't separate them.
So today, Peter, we're going to do a new format that we started doing, and we only did that once before. It's called the Talk Masters. And what we're going to do, we're going to very soon, as soon as we finish talking, we're going to have you do a speech about the connection of humor and happiness. And then we're going to evaluate that speech. And then we're going to talk about what it is that you plan to do about it. Because it's a fascinating concept. And I think it's really an important concept. I think that when you look at things, you can look at it any way you want. Like somebody always says, it's not what happens to you that matters, it's how you take it. And so when something happens, how you take it, and if you decide on how you take it, that gives you a lot of power. But if you can take it in a humorous way and let no matter what happens to you turn into happiness, now that's being in a really powerful place. So I'm really curious about how all the idea of all this started to kind of cook in your brain.
Yeah, that's a great question because everybody asks me that. And each time I'm asked, I answer a little differently because I discover something new about it. But I started to evaluate my own happiness, my own sense of humor, even though people consider me funny. They never say, wow, you're a really happy person. But I was in the entertainment business, so I was had to be funny. And I started to evaluate my level of happiness and humor, and it gave me some concern because as soon as I evaluated, I realized I had to question some really important things about myself, my life, my relationships, how I relate to the world, and what do I expect, you know, my expectations, etc. And as I started to do that, this idea evolved, and I came to the realization that most of the world is like me. Most people are not happy. They don't focus on happiness, and most people are not funny, or they don't focus on humor, or they don't see the humor in life, and they don't see the connection between the two. But I had to really go deeply inside myself and discover what it is about me, you know, in relation to the happiness and humor connection. And as a result, this workshop gave birth to this, so to speak. Not physically, I mean just in the matter of, you know, the material and, oh, you know, the work that went behind it. So, yeah, it was a process. It was a self-discovery process, and it was also a process of looking at my relationship with the world and looking at people's states of happiness and humor. So a lot of that's in the workshop.
So I was going to ask you, why do people think you're funny? And you just did something really cute, and it could be taken as really funny. You said, and I gave birth to this idea, and then you said, not physically. And that is really funny because I want to know how you can give birth to this idea physically.
That's funny. I guess, you know, I mean, I didn't go through a birth process as like my wife has or my mother did, you know. But there's an interesting idea that we give birth to our creative ideas in this world. You know, we think of the idea, we nurture it, you know, we give it food, we feed it, it grows, it becomes real, it's birth, it's now in the world, and then it matures, you know, into an adult. It matures into adulthood, let's say. The idea, and that's when it becomes something that you can give to the world. So when I say I gave birth to it, I went through that process. You know?
So that's really the process that any creativity would take. First, it would be a thought in your head. Then I guess the thought can become a little bit more fermented into an idea. And if you nurture that, as you said, if you feed that idea and you give it food, then eventually you give birth to it, and eventually you have to cut the umbilical cord. and let it grow and let it mature into whatever it is that is going to mature. That's a great metaphor. That's a great metaphor.
Right.
But I was just wondering what it was that made you have to qualify that with saying not physically. That's what I was thinking about.
I guess that I could just assess that that's my net sense of humor. I look at the, I love to look at words and the way phrases are and the way people present ideas, and I always find something humorous about it. I love to do wordplay, and I like to take ideas and create a metaphor and then, you know, point it out. My wife says I'm really obvious sometimes, and I guess people could find that a little annoying, you know, like, you know, ba-dum-bum type of thing. But I try and keep my sense of humor really focusing on, like, the best things that are funny are our experiences. Our experiences, when we present them, if we present them well to someone, meaning that we present them seriously from a, you know, only seriously, not deeply dark, but serious as, you know, they're an experience, and we present them from a place in us that has experienced it, it's very funny. You know, talk about something that happened to you at the supermarket or at the gas station or when you went to visit a friend, you know, and it can become a funny experience. And why? Because people can relate to it. See, that's where a lot of comedy today falls flat. People cannot relate to what the comedian or the humorist is saying.
Mm-hmm.
They have no experience with it. The funny, if you look at the history of comedy, for example, or humor, humorous, the great ones always related stories that people or situations that people could relate to in their own life or even imagine that they could relate to it because they've had similar experiences and they can connect to it. It makes it very funny, because they, especially when somebody else suffers from it, because we love to laugh at pain when somebody else is experiencing, not our own, someone else's.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. It also depends on who's looking at it and how they perceive it. Like, I'll give you an example. I had this long, long hair. It was, like, longer than my waist, and my hair is really, really thick. Right now it's thin, but it used to be really thick. I think it's thin. People think my hair is thin. But anyway, so I went to get a haircut in Vidal Sassoon, one of the most exclusive salons in Manhattan, because it was really important for me to cut my hair off and get a really good haircut. So I went there, and I paid so much more than I would normally pay for a haircut. I would say at least like 10 times more. And they gave me the so-called expert in the place, and he cut off all my hair, and the haircut was horrific. It was the most horrible haircut I ever had. So I was with my friend, and I went down to the bathroom, and I looked in the mirror, and I literally started crying, and I threw myself on the floor. And my friend, I'm sorry, excuse my language, but I think she was a bitch, she started laughing hysterically. And so the perspective of what I saw and what she saw was a little bit different at the moment, but now I can laugh about it.
Right. We get that delay. Once our emotions get out of it, we step back, we can separate ourselves from the actual experience and laugh at it. But while we're
right,
personally involved in it, it becomes more difficult, right? But here's the problem with your experience. See, you said haircut. Now, there's a problem, because men get haircuts. Women don't get haircuts. And haircuts, because men get them, should be a lot cheaper. So if I were you, I'd go back to them and tell them to either change the name of what they're giving women or give you some money back, because you shouldn't have gotten a haircut. You should have gotten a styling. Women don't get, right? Isn't that right? Women don't get haircuts. They get styling, or they go to the parlor and they get, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a haircut, right?
Yeah, style, sure. But
yeah,
when you hear girls,
that's more
from
money.
Being, no, but when you hear girls from being the length of your waist to being shorter than most men have it, well, not anymore, but to being really short, then that is also a haircut. It should have been also designed, which it was attempted at a design, except that the guy really didn't know what he was doing, and he didn't know how to do my type of hair. So obviously, he messed it up. But anyway, so that's a moment that I will never forget, where I was so upset, and then somebody was standing there laughing so hard. To me, it didn't seem funny at the time, but I can see why she would laugh. Or maybe she was just a bad person. I don't really know. But anyway,
are you still
yeah.
friends? Yeah. Oh, good. Okay. And your hair grew back.
Oh, my hair grew back, but you know what? I will never trust anyone to cut my hair like that again. I would never walk in and say, just cut my hair, ever. I have
right.
to give them instructions. And even when I give them instructions, they don't really always listen. But that guy has changed my
right.
way of getting haircuts for the rest of my life.
Right.
So,
you know,
yeah,
something
like
about – I was just going to say something about that experience is that people should always laugh with you, not at you. Like, if your friend was laughing, was she laughing at you or with you? Well, you weren't laughing, so she was laughing at you. And people take offense at that. You know, when you laugh at someone, you should laugh with them. So they see the humor in it, too, and the irony and the, you know, the perspective is the same, the perception.
Yeah, I look back now, and I don't think she was a very nice person, but I can understand why she would think it was funny. But
mm-hmm.
I think that I would not have been able to laugh in front of someone's face when I can see that they're obviously really upset. I would have laughed about it later on, like now I can laugh about it after my hair grew back. Because I had to wear a hat for like 3 months, and that was not a fun experience either. But yeah, I mean, humor is humor, but you also have to understand that when you laugh at people, they don't find it humorous at all. But
exactly.
what you said about how people can relate to the experiences, and it's usually something that they go through every day, but they never really see the humor, so... As a humorist, you point out the humor in the things that you do every day, and then those things become a whole different kind of experience on an everyday basis. So that's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's something you just don't – you have to maintain it like something like a car. You know how you maintain your car? You have to maintain that. You just can't say, okay, I'm going to do this with humor, and it's just going to – I've decided that, and that's the way it's going to be. No, you have to nurture it, maintain it. It has to become a habit. You know, and you have to integrate it into your life, into your daily life. So you have to practice it, really. Not telling jokes or humor, but you have seeing things, finding the humor in things. You have to practice it because what happens when things happen to us? Our ego reacts first in our emotions. Our ego feeds our emotions, and then we just go out. We just lose it. We get out of sorts, right? How about the person who bumps their knee or their toe on a piece of on furniture, and the first thing they do is yell in pain, and then all of a sudden that pain turns to laughter. You've seen that before? Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So when you say practice it, what does that mean?
Well, it's a very personal thing. You come up with a set of, you give yourself, like anything else, I mean, it's personal as to how each person will add to it and accelerate it. For example, you have a certain set of rules and guidelines for doing that I give you in the workshop. And then you follow those to the best of your ability, and you develop a pattern, a habit, to be able to, you know, to identify humor. And, of course, when you start to do this, initially you'll fail. And that's funny. You'll find humor in that. So, you know, but eventually you get to the, you know, you can just kind of, but you have to keep doing this process over and over. Because anything that changes us in life, that changes us from our bad nature to our good nature, requires a lot of energy, you know. Because, like, take happiness, for example. Here's an example of what I'm saying. People don't, you know what, people search for happiness. You hear somebody goes, I'm going to search for happiness. They never say, I'm going to search for sadness. Why? Because there's abundance of that around us. Just turn on the news. Turn on the TV. Go see a movie. I mean, everything is dealing with our emotions related to sadness, right? We have to go specifically and search for humor and happiness. We look for them. I'm on a journey to find myself. What do you want to find about yourself? What makes me happy? My happiness. You know, I want to find happiness in this life. So we're always searching for that.
I just want to be happy. And so what we're going to do, are you ready to give your speech about humor and happiness connection?
Oh, you're so nice that you would actually ask me to do this. Yes, I can give my speech. Thank you.
Okay, so great, because we want to go into the Talkmasters and we want to do the speech. I'm really looking forward to it. So what is the title of the speech? The Happiness and Humor Connection?
Happiness and Humor, A Lifelong Journey.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Okay. So Happiness and Humor, A Lifelong Connection. Go for
journey,
it.
Yes.
A lifelong journey.
Thank you, Tippi. Well, many of us believe, you know, in the myth that we achieve happiness only when our lives are perfect, like a perfect relationship, I have the perfect job, perfect house, perfect vacation home. I mean, the list just goes on. And then we find out after a while that these things don't create this lasting happiness. So what happens? Happiness becomes this elusive thing that we desire, but we just don't know how to achieve it. And we tend to then focus on our future state of happiness, like I'll be happy when it's the weekend, I'll be happy when I'm on vacation, you know. So we put happiness, we kind of put it in that little container. And then we have laughter, of course, and laughter. Now, there's an amazing source of joy, laughter, and it's free. That's a gift. I mean, you don't have to have money to have some, and you don't have to be tech savvy to access it. You just have to have a right attitude, you know, a good joke, good laugh. I mean, the greatest gift that we can give someone is laughter. I mean, if we succeed in making someone laugh, then we're kind of like a physician, you know, who can heal someone for whatever it is they're suffering doing it. And then if we find that we're not happy and we can't find humor in our life, then it's probably because we need radical surgery on our worldview. And then you'll say, well, you know, but I'm not funny. And that's okay if you're not funny, because it's really more important to see funny than to be funny. And we can maintain happiness and diffuse tension with humor. And there's been research. Researchers have discovered that laughter causes the brain to release this hormone called endorphins. And this hormone actually releases physical pain and raises our level of happiness. And to me, endorphins sounds like two words, end and orphans. Like you can put an end to someone feeling alone by sharing a good laugh. And then there's been an independent survey I was reading about in a medical journal that says that people dying in a hospice reveal that their biggest regret in life is that they didn't laugh more. I mean, we never heard anybody on their last dying words is, gee, I wish I spent more time at the office. You know, people are looking for some value in their life. And the office, I mean, happiness and humor in the workplace is essential. We spend most of our day there, so it really becomes important to have some in the workplace. Imagine starting every day like you took a happy pill, and the intention was to do your best at work and make everybody laugh and feel good about themselves. And then I ask myself, why do we take work so seriously? Couldn't we accomplish something great and be funny at the same time? I mean, in an effort to make our lives easier, we've created this industry of distraction, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, texting, selfies, et cetera, and then we find that it adds more tension and stress to our lives as a result. So let me tell you a little story. One day at work, the company's database server went down. And the users had to call the help desk. And then the help desk had to find the database engineer who had to locate the support team to get on the phone. And then the CEO, the CIO, the CTO, and the COO joined the call. And the rest of the day was spent fixing the problem. And after the problem was fixed, they had to figure out the how, the why, and the who was responsible. Now, my father, he was an accountant. And the tools of his trade were a blue-lined yellow notepad and a number 2 pencil. When that pencil point broke, he walked over to the pencil sharpener. It took him about 30 seconds to accomplish that task. And that's if he stopped to say good morning to Helen and what a nice day it is, Bob. I mean, he could have taken an extra minute to make someone feel good about themselves, since it only took about 30 seconds to resolve his problem. Maybe that's just what we need to uncomplicate our lives. Maybe we just need a blue line yellow notepad and a number 2 pencil. I mean, our lives have become so complicated that we lose our happiness and our humor. So in conclusion, you know, we have to look at happiness and humor as a lifelong journey. It should be a joyous one, one that's filled with gratitude. And I'm so grateful to be here, Tippy, that I can share this. I'm grateful that you're here participating. I mean, it's our choice to be happy and to share as much happiness as humor as we possibly can. I mean, there's 7 billion people in the world, so what are we waiting for? Let's get started. I mean, because putting off happiness is doomed for failure. And putting off humor, that's no joke. So my wish is that someday you can laugh and say that your life was no joke. Because after all is said and done, life is far too important for us to take seriously. Thank you.
Great line. Great line. Life is way too important for us to take seriously. I love that ending. And so there you go. That was the speech that you put together for Happiness and Humor and a lifelong journey. And it is a journey that never ends. That's really true. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to take a look at the speech, and I'm going to point out a few things about it. And one of the things that I'm going to do, which usually we have divided between two people of doing it, I'm going to look at the filler words and how they affected your speech. Because when you do a speech and all people can hear is the auditory, every filler word you use takes away from a word that could have made the speech more powerful. So it's a little bit more important than when you're also there physically and you can do kind of gestures and incorporate your body language. But when you just cannot do that and you only have the auditory, every word you say is really, really important. So I'm going to take a look at a few of the filler words that we used. I'm going to look at a few of the really powerful statements. And we're going to look and see maybe there is one or two ways that we could have made the speech more powerful. And at the things that you already did to make it as powerful, to make it very powerful. And one of the things, of course, is the last sentence, that life is too serious. I love the last sentence that you say. What was the last sentence you said? Life is no joke. So the first thing that I can say about the overall speech is there were a few times that I wanted to laugh, but I held myself back because I didn't want to interrupt you, and I think that's not a good idea. I think when you listen to someone and they say something that really inspires you to laugh, don't be afraid. Just go ahead and laugh. Definitely my bad. The message that you have is a very powerful message. It's a message that can take someone. People take life way too seriously. There's no question about that. And if you begin to think about and to focus on how to take life a little bit less seriously, then life becomes a seriously much more powerful game that you play. But you also get to laugh. You get to stop and say hello to people. So all those little things can only happen if you really take a step back and stop taking life seriously. So I think that maybe a subtitle should be how to take life a little bit less seriously or stop taking life seriously, because that's really part of the humor and the happiness connection. Then you said another sentence, and it's free. And that's also a really powerful sentence. I'm going to point out a few powerful sentences that we have here. But when you said, and it's free, you started the next sentence really fast. You didn't give enough time to digest. And again, because it's audio, the way you say it, the way you say every word is a big difference. But when you say, and it's free, and you want that to sink in, and maybe in your head you count 3, 2, 1, 3 seconds, you gave it about a half a second between and it's free and the next sentence, and if you waited a few more seconds, you would have made that sentence as powerful as you want. You would have made it a lot more bigger and a lot more powerful. The words that you incorporated a lot that really took away from the message was the word you know and the word I mean. And the word you know is really kind of, we use that to to fill in the gap between the time that we say something, especially if you're thinking about what the next thing you're going to say is, but even if not, it just makes you feel like you're still talking because silence is very awkward. So the word you know you said four times, the word I mean you said five times, but it would really make it a lot more powerful if you focus on not saying those words. And then you have a few such powerful sentences or words that you use that I really wanted to point those out because I think those words, every one of those sentences is could be a speech all by itself. So the first one that I heard was that you have to see funny rather than to be funny. To see funny and to be funny is really two different things that people do not distinguish. They don't really understand. And just by the virtue of saying that, it gives the whole idea of seeing funny a lot of power. So that's a really powerful statement. Another powerful statement is that at the end of someone's life, sharing a laugh, an end for someone living alone by sharing a long laugh. So that was really powerful because sharing a laugh is brings up a really nice image in your brain, especially when you think of someone being alone. I also love the happy pill. I sometimes call it a chill pill, but I think the happy pill or the humor pill sounds really good. And one of my biggest powerful statements that you made is that putting off humor is no joke. And that I think those few sentences connected in between can really make people perk up and listen and really understand that seeing life in a humorous way is really not a joke. It's really a lifestyle, and it's a way of changing your life. And so you mentioned a workshop a few times, and so I guess that you're working on a workshop, or have you given any workshops?
I have given small workshops, 90 minutes, half hour, try out some of my ideas. And my future plan is to move this workshop into a longer weekend where people can experience many different states of their happiness and humor. Yeah, so I've given,
right,
you know, shorter, more, you know, capsulized versions of it, which is good because, you know, each workshop, every workshop material should be really put in like capsules. You have part one, presentation, opening. Then you, from your opening, you go into the material. From the material, you bring that to them. You get them involved, the participants. And then the participants, after they get involved, then you move on to the part where they react. And they've absorbed it, and they've gotten involved. Now they have a moment to react. And then you keep repeating this cycle over until you come to a conclusion. But within those, all those parameters, that's where all the material is presented based on which module you're presenting. And you can take them out and put one in, replace it with one. You know, I look at it that way, very modular. But I keep it organic because I don't like it. I don't present it like it's a clinical thing. Because I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a psychologist. I don't analyze people. What am I? I'm an entertainer with a lot of life experience, a lot of experience in just a lot of experience that is of value to share with people, because that's really valuable. Those are things you can't learn. Someone can't teach you that. You have to have that, you know. But there's people who have life experience. They never do anything with it. They just absorb it. Maybe they never do anything with it. It just is a burden for them, you know, and they carry it with them like a weight. And other people are different. They throw it off, you know, but they never really do anything with it. Sharing that experience is great. So in my workshop, for example, this is what I'm doing with the workshop, but then I show people how to do that in their life. They don't have to start a workshop, but they can share the burden of their life and the burden, you know, and that, and not in a burdensome way that depresses people, but in a way that brings value to their experience. And people can look at them as, I don't know, a teacher, a guide, or somebody who's just nice to be around. Let's just start with that, leave it at that. You just want to be around people that are, you know, that are good, that feel good about themselves, that can share that, because you want to give that back to them, create this, you know, this circular connection between people. Because really, we're all connected, whether we admit it or not. We are all connected, all of us. Even, you know, and when we have something in common, that's when we really build that connection. And the thing that we have in common is happiness and humor. We all have that. So when we build that connection between us, that bond exists. It's very strong.
Yes, it is. And so before we have to wind up, there is one more thing that I want to ask you about you. And you did mention it before. And you said that people think you're funny. So I want to know, why do people think you're funny? Sometimes you have a very subtle humor, from what I know. And I can definitely see that. But why do you think people think you're funny?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, I don't want to know why. I never ask them. Because if I ask them, I'll start evaluating it. I'll start judging it.
Or think about it too much.
Yeah, right. I don't want to. I just want to take it as a gift and use it and let it flow naturally, as opposed to starting to judge it or think about it. Well, this person said that about it, you know, and that, you know, and I don't know. I never asked them why they do.
Yeah, like your wife says that you're really obvious. And the fact that it's your wife that says it, I wouldn't take it too seriously, because she knows you in a way that nobody else knows you. So if she sees that it's obvious, that does not mean that too many people are going to see it, or that everybody sees it, because somebody that knows you that well, they can even anticipate what you're going to say most of the time.
Oh, yeah, sure. Right, yes, exactly. But I have to take everything she tells me with more than a grain of salt, you know.
Of course. Of course,
because
you have to understand that she's saying it from the perspective of somebody that knows you really well.
Right. Well, she knows my potential, and she knows my breaking points. So that's where that judgment is coming in, that observation. She knows she's seen me be great, and she's seen me fail. But I tell you, the one thing that really gets somebody into a place where they can share their experiences is more their failures than their successes. Because the failures have more value than the success. The success is fleeting, but the failure can move you to that next success. Most people have the idea that, oh, I failed, I'm a failure. I have to stop, I can't do anything, I'm no good. Their ego takes over and they fall into it. But if they correct that part of them, you know, that ego, and they say, oh, I failed, but we will find the value of that. Oh, I see what, you know, I see what that is, you know. I see what the reasons are, and I see why and the cause, and it's all because of me, and let me fix that and move on. And then they allow themselves to this breathing room, this gap in between where they became aware of that and where they're going. And within that, they create their next success. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think failure is one of the things you said, that there's a lot of humor in failure. There definitely is. But there's also a lot of power in failure, and people don't see that. So you really do need to take a look and see at the power that failure gives you, and basically invite that in. Don't be afraid of it or try to run away from it. And I think that's really one of the most powerful things that you can find out about failure, is that it's not something that you have to avoid at all costs, that it's something you can actually embrace. And I think that's really powerful too. And so before I let you go, you said that you were an entertainer. Give me a little bit more details of what kind of entertainer are you, other than the fact that you lived in Los Angeles, where everybody's an entertainer.
Yeah, but I was the real deal. Well, I started out very young. I was fascinated by the art of magic, and I consider magic a fine art. It is a fine art, and I got into it as a very young child, and I was very good at it. I won awards, and really helped me to overcome a lot of blocks and a lot of communication, hand-eye coordination, definitely. And I love the fact that I could fool people, right? But you got to do that with the right attitude, because you can't defend them. But I liked having that power. I loved having that power that I could manipulate their perception because really the art of magic is perception. You're really manipulating people's perception. The hand is not faster than the eye, definitely not. The eye just doesn't know where to look. We don't understand, you know, the methods, and that's fine. You're not supposed to. And magic is a wonderful art form. It's a fine art. And so I got interested in that, and I became a professional, and I did that for years. And then I started to work in comedy clubs because at one point comedy clubs were really fascinated by putting a magic act in between opening comedian and the headliner. So I got into that circuit, that market, and I did it. I had a silent act, but I realized the silent act just wasn't going from a person standing there and doing comedy and speaking to the silent act and then going back to somebody else. Right, speaking and doing jokes. So I started to speak, and I started to develop my comedy chops, as we call it. And that's how I discovered my sense of humor and the different levels of it and the intensity of it and what I had, you know, and what I could work with, because you really got this toolbox, you know, that you're working with. So, and I would take really bold steps, you know. I would try things out without rehearsing them. And it was a pass or fail moment. But you know what? When I failed big. When I succeeded even bigger. And those, like I was saying before, those failures really helped me grow. I got really funny really fast. And I didn't do jokes like, you know, like comics did. I did situations that were funny. I created within that art form. And I didn't do it like, a lot of problem I had with magicians was they always did self-deprecating humor, you know, as though they were embarrassed by their magic, and they did self-deprecating humor. I never did any of that, so that separated me into another class. So I did that for a long time, and that's how I developed my sense of humor, what I thought was humorous. You know, I would say I was always a class clown because I was always looking for attention, so it was natural for me to get into the entertainment industry.
Right.
And then by some bizarre...
look at the humor also, yeah, to look at the humor,
right.
Since you were a
yeah.
class clown.
And then by some... Exactly, yes. Yeah, to look at humor is a wonderful thing. It's by some bizarre turn in my life, I got into technology because it was a sexy industry. I liked it. I was attracted to it. It was open. It was a wide open field, and I wanted to add it to my skill set. And I rode that wave for a while in the dot-com industry. I got really good at technology. It's interesting to switch from, like, the entertainer mindset to the technologist mindset. And this is where I discovered humor in the workplace and how it was lacking. Oh, some workplaces, just depressing.
Yeah,
people are so
totally.
Wrapped up in their job, they don't even have a moment to get in touch with anything. You know, their life becomes a cycle of steps. I get up, I clean myself up, clean clothes, I go to my job. I give everything I have to that job because it's my whole identity, my whole life. I cannot lose that job. I have to hold on to it. I have to play this game. The cubicle becomes your home away from home. You have pictures of your family all over because you really miss them, you know. So you put a lot of pictures all over your cubicle. It becomes your other home, you know, that you go to for 8 hours. And you come home, you have your meal, you watch your movie, you watch your TV shows, whatever. You go to bed, and you do this every 5 days until the weekend comes. Maybe some people work on the weekend, and they mean this just becomes a monotony. And we're like, you know, and where's the time for the happiness and humor? We think, oh, no, it's don't worry. I'll have happiness when I save up enough money to retire, right? And you get to this point where you retire, and you realize, I don't have a damn thing to do. I don't have anything to do. I don't know what – I never developed any interest, you know. So you fish. That's okay. You know, maybe you crochet. That's great. That's creative. But, you know, you don't have anything that's really fulfilling. You got a big void to fill in, you know. And so I try and help people make that transition. Also find it in the workplace, find it at home, find it within their relationships, find it within their self, their home life, their work life, their public life, whatever they're doing. If they're a scientist, a doctor, a veterinarian, a salesperson, doesn't matter, a beautician, doesn't matter what you do, it's all there for you. You know, so I try and bring that out. But anyway, to continue to answer your question, so then that's how I got into this. I slowly evolved. I had a great experience of experiencing humor and happiness in the entertainment field and experiencing it in the corporate world. I could put those two and I could look at them, and that's how I created this workshop.
That sounds great, Peter. We're really looking forward to hear more about your workshop. We really are going to come back together so you can tell us when you're ready to offer it and when you're ready to present it so that we can actually learn from it and we can actually participate in it. And now we've come to the end of our time together here on Tippy Talk. I'd like to thank you so much, Peter, for joining us. And we're looking forward to seeing you again soon. It's really been a pleasure speaking with you, and again, thank you so much for joining us. And don't forget, we want your story. We're here to listen to your story and share your gift. It can be any story. It does not have to be what you consider inspirational or special, because we here at Tippy Talk Show want your story. We know it's special. We want to hear from you. You've been listening to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Feldenstein. We bid you a magical journey and let your talent be your potion.
Thank you, Tippy, so much.
Have a wonderful day.
You too, thank you.
Been running through me like you got somewhere to be. You're stuck in a full-time daydream. Always in a rush, I know you're busy for lunch. Taking pictures of your coffee. Your aviators, but your heart.